it appears to me that there's going to be a war that precedes the Gog of Magog invasion of Ezekiel 38 and 39. Many prophecy buffs at this point are looking at for Ezekiel 38 and 39 to occur in the very near future, because you've got Turkey and Iran becoming very deep enemies of Israel, and they are involved in Ezekiel 38 and 39. You've also got Russia developing strong relationships with both of those. But what I'm concerned about is that Ezekiel 38 and 39 requires an Israel, according to Ezekiel 38 verses 8 through 13, that dwells securely in the last days in the midst of the land without walls, bars, nor gates, in receipt of great wealth, because Russia is, its coalition is coming against an Israel in those conditions for to take plunder and great spoil.
Yes.
And although Israel is in the latter days being brought back into the land, the Jews back into the land of Israel, they are not dwelling securely without walls. There's a 403-mile wall constructed in Israel to keep Palestinian terrorism out of Israel proper. So I began researching the possibility that the Arab-Israeli conflict mentioned in Psalm 83, where they come together, they want to confederate it, it's in Psalm 83, verses 4 and 5, to destroy the Jewish state, that the name Israel be remembered no more. And in studying this, we find that it's the Israel's most observable enemies today, excluding Iran, and that encompasses the nations and populations inside of those, like Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Palestinians, but the nations that share common borders with Israel. You have Lebanon, where Hezbollah is. You have Syria, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Philistia, which would be where the Hamas are, and then, of course, the West Bank, where the Palestinians are. These are the populations that were described 3,000 years ago by in Psalm 83 by Asaph, that are going to come together in a confederacy to destroy Israel. And through careful research, I've found that this prophecy has not found final fulfillment yet.
Right.
So therefore, it looks like we could be right on the verge of a this war prophecy followed by Ezekiel 38 and 39 in the aftermath, because Israel will then, in the aftermath of Psalm 83, be dwelling securely, free from Arab threat and terrorism, and
yes,
they could tear down their wall, etc., and they could, of course, become very wealthy. Now,
let me interject a question here. I know in Ezekiel 39, Israel has territory east of the Jordan when that happens, and of course, today, Israel does not have territory east of the Jordan. Jordan has territory east of the Jordan. And you do just a really good job of showing not just through Psalm 83 and Isaiah 17, but also Jeremiah 49 and Obadiah 1 and Zephaniah and I think Ezekiel 25, the prelude. So explain to the listeners why you believe, again, this precedes the Ezekiel 38 war, and how imminent do you believe this attack might be?
Well, that's another reason why I do believe Israel has to, defeat the Psalm 83 Confederacy, because we're told in Ezekiel 39, as you pointed out, that when God destroys the Gog of Magog invasion, and there will be probably millions, it says hordes of Magog's invaders will be buried east of some sea in a valley. And you only have three alternatives as to what sea Ezekiel was describing. You have the Mediterranean Sea, but it doesn't appear as though they're going to be burying millions of potentially contaminated soldiers in a cemetery in downtown Tel Aviv. Then you also have the Sea of Galilee, but east of that is not technically a valley. You have the strategic Golan Heights, and that belongs to Syria. Of course, Israel's got the Golan Heights, but east of the Sea of Galilee is really sovereign to Syria. So the most likely candidate of a place where these hordes of dead soldiers are going to be buried is east of the Dead Sea, which is a valley that's, pretty much useless valley in central Jordan. Now, it says in Jeremiah 49, verses 1 and 2, that there will be a war in Rabbah of the Ammonites, and Ammonites, of course, would represent northern Jordan around Amman, where the capital of Jordan is today. And it says it shall be a desolate mound, and her villages shall be burned with fire, and then Israel shall take possession of its inheritance. And I think that that is going to find fulfillment in the aftermath of Psalm 83. The Ammonites are a prominent member in the Psalm 83 Confederacy, the Jordanians. Also, I believe that there's another reason to think that Jordan becomes sovereign to Israel prior to even the tribulation period, is because we're told that even Christ himself said in Matthew 24 that when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet, that they are to flee out of Judea into the mountains. And it turns out the mountains he's alluding to are the mountains of Mount Seir of southern Jordan, where today you have Petra. This is where a faithful remnant will flee in the mid part of the tribulation, and they wouldn't necessarily flee there if it was under Jordanian sovereignty. So I think there's sound reasons to believe that Israel will actually take over Jordan before Messiah returns.
Yeah, you believe that they're going to annex territory in southern Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. Don't you believe that?
I do, but I always preface this, Jim, because a lot of people don't look through the lens of a greater Israel. They see Israel today as pretty much the Israel that's going to exist throughout the entirety until Messiah returns, and then at which point, when Messiah returns, he gives them all the land promised to Abraham in Genesis 15:18, which goes from the river Nile in Egypt to the river Euphrates, which courses through Iraq and modern-day Syria. Now, I don't necessarily teach that Israel gets all that land at that one time. I believe they get it incrementally, and then they get the remainder of it when Messiah returns. Now, we know there is precedent for Israel winning in victory and taking land. King David and King Solomon did it, and, of course, now in 1967, the Jews did it when they almost tripled the size of Israel by taking East Jerusalem, the Golan Heights, the Sinai, and the West Bank and the Gaza.
Sure.
Now, it does say in Obadiah at the latter part that it appears as though there will be southern Lebanon will be annexed by Israel. It does appear to say that they'll actually be prisoners of war from the Psalm 83 Confederacies that are held in detention camps there, if I'm interpreting that correctly. And then also in Isaiah 19, around verses 16 through 18, it talks about five cities in the land of Egypt speaking the language of Canaan. And one of those cities is going to be called the City of Destruction. The language of Canaan, of course, is Hebrew. So the city of destruction would imply that it's a city that was destroyed. And so Egypt is in Psalm 83 as well. So I do look to Israel to annex territory in the aftermath of Psalm 83.
Yeah, I agree with you that there's going to be some expanding of the borders. How much and how quickly, we're not certain. But it certainly looks like in Ezekiel 38 that they're in the midst of the land, they're prospering, and they have this real sense of security. And, of course, right now they're surrounded by Hamas, Hezbollah, Syria, and many other terrorist groups that would like to take them out. So I do think this is a war that precedes Ezekiel 38. What is happening today in the Middle East that makes you believe that this war or this sequence of wars could be triggered at any moment?
Well, presently there's an enormous amount of muscle flexing and saber rattling going on in the Middle East. You've actually got sort of an act of desperation for a final peace plan being put together by the King of Saudi Arabia, Abdullah. He's going through a tour this week into Cairo, and he's going to try to really push forward the Saudi Peace Initiative of 2002 that he put together. But if you look at the events that are currently going on, you've got a whole series of things going on. You have Hezbollah has 20,000 troops that have been deployed down to the southern borders of Lebanon. This happened relatively recently, and they have they're hiding out in hospitals and homes, civilian homes and things like that. Israel, of course, showed photos of their deployment down there on detailed maps. They did that on July 8th in 3D simulations. They had so much detail. Hezbollah goes down into southern Lebanon, and they've also got about 60,000 rockets, and according to Benjamin Netanyahu, that are in their arsenal. Some of those include Scud missiles that they got from Syria. They also have chemicals. And Israel has been preparing for a multi-front war with Iran, Hezbollah, Syria, and Hamas, and they're passing out gas masks since February. You also have Saudi Arabia that opened a thin strip of air to the Israeli Air Force to do a preemptive strike against Iran, which Saudi Arabia is very concerned about Iran's nuclear capabilities because Iran has voiced its concerns that they would like to take over the Fertile Crescent and make it a Shiite crescent, starting all the way through Iraq, Syria, on to Lebanon, and then working its way on down through to Saudi Arabia. Well, Saudi Arabia, of course, is the number one producer of oil in the OPEC nations. They sit on a quarter of the world's oil reserves. They are the host country of the two most holy sites of Islam. So you've got Saudi King Abdullah extremely concerned about Iran, and he's opened a thin strip of air for Israel to do a preemptive strike. When he did that a couple days later, Israel deployed Air Force craft and things over to Tabuk in northern Saudi Arabia, a commercial strip over there. Now, of course, this is unusual because Saudi Arabia doesn't even allow synagogues anywhere upon the kingdom, and yet they're allowing Israeli aircraft to deploy itself into the northern part of Saudi Arabia.
Do you think that the a strike on Iran's nuclear capabilities might be the trigger, or do you think Iran themselves might trigger events through Syria, or how do you see that this could actually go down?
Yeah, and also maybe when?
Well, I see the real possibility. At some point in time, Israel is going to have to deal with Iran's nuclear program. The only, you know, the thoughts of sanctions working, they're called toothless sanctions. They're in place right now, but no one's really expecting them to work. Unless America, perhaps, did a preemptive strike, which no one's really holding out for that option. It really does put the burden to bear upon Israel. So at some point in time, highly probably Israel will have to preempt a strike against Iran. Now, if it may be that Iran doesn't want that to occur, and they start to get their proxies to act up, and namely Hezbollah, to do something that creates a deterrent or a distraction for Israel, another skirmish, if you will, like they had in that 34-day conflict of 2006. I personally think Israel is about to preempt a strike against Iran in the very near future. Iran is trying to get its hands on the S-300 missile defense system from Russia, although that seems to be being delayed. They have apparently gotten their hands on a very advanced system from China that would work just as well. See, this all puts pressure on Israel to have to do a preemptive strike before this comes into place, and of course before Iran gets its nuclear weapon, which CIA Director Leon Panetta said recently in his trip to the Middle East that Iran already has enriched enough uranium for two nuclear bombs, but they just don't have the launching power with it yet on a missile. Mm-hmm. So, and he said that could be within a year to 2 years. Of course, I don't think Israel's going to wait on his intelligence. They've got their own, and they can't take that risk. So I'm looking for a preemptive strike from Israel and or Iran to prevent a preemptive strike from Israel and create its own deterrent through the Hezbollah. And I believe at that point Israel gets engaged in a skirmish, and you'll start to see something. It'll be more, I believe, than just a skirmish. I believe you're going to see some chemicals come across. And again, like I said, Israel's passing out gas masks presently nationally since February. And I believe the moment you see chemicals coming into Israel, mm-hmm. then you're going to see Damascus probably get attacked. It is the most strategic target for Israel to take out.
And Israel has announced that if Syria ever launches chemical or biological, they would be forced to wipe out Damascus.
Well, they don't have the opportunity to do a war of attrition. You know, Hezbollah fired 4,000 rockets in a 34-day campaign in July through August of 2006, and they were supposed to dismantle after that skirmish, as per UN Resolution 1701, dismantle their arsenals. Well, meanwhile, they have 15 times as many and more powerful rockets, including Scuds and tipped with chemicals, some of these, 60,000 rockets, and we're only talking 6 years later. And Israel will not be able to deal. They can launch apparently about 800 per day at that rate. And so Israel can't deal with that. They're going to have to act expeditiously and decisively. And I'm looking at, you know, is there any way to craft a peace before these Israeli war prophecies come? Or is there just another skirmish that's going to happen, like Operation Cast Lead with the Gaza or a Hezbollah conflict, or are we headed for a war in the Middle East of epic biblical proportion? And I think time's run out for peace. That what the Saudi Peace Initiative proposes is an absolute no way for Israel to accept it. It calls for them to withdraw back to the borders pre-1967. It calls for them to bring all the Palestinian refugees, millions of them, into Israel proper. It calls for them to give a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. These are no-goes for Israel. It also calls for the Golan Heights to be relinquished back to Syria. And this is one of the topics that will be discussed when King Abdullah goes to see Assad of Syria, Bashar Assad, this Thursday. I believe they meet. Now, it's interesting. Saudi Arabia came out with this peace initiative in 2002, and it was confirmed by the Council of Arab States in Lebanon. And he hasn't gone back to visit Syria or Lebanon or, I believe, even Egypt since 2002, but now because he's made a promise to Barack Obama when he came over here recently. He is now going over to talk to these people, Syria and Hezbollah, and Lebanon, rather, the President Michael Suleiman in Lebanon. These are people he hasn't seen since 2002. Now, when he came over here to talk to Obama, I believe that was the latter part of June, Obama asked him to exercise influence in the Middle East so that we can prevail in our war in Afghanistan. You know, we're almost going on our 10th year in Afghanistan, and that's, of course, 10 years is when Russia pulled out in a stalemate, you know, in their war with Afghanistan. And so he's asked Abdullah, King Abdullah, to exercise influence in there so that we can, you know, come out successfully in that, our Afghanistan war. And in turn, Abdullah said what he wants from Obama is to guarantee that Israel will accept the Saudi peace initiative that I've just been talking about that was formed in 2002. And Obama's comments supposedly were he'll make sure it gets done and he'll force it if necessary. Now, of course, that didn't come up when the photo op occurred when Benjamin Netanyahu was over here subsequent to that. But, you know, we're looking at a very volatile situation.
Very.
Bill, you know, one of the questions that I think a lot of people continually have concerning this whole end time scenario is that we do know that the idea behind Islam is world conquest. It's not just radical Islam. Basically, it's Islam, period. And if in the Quran, of course, this is the whole idea behind it. And Sharia law to be implemented everywhere in the entire earth. And we have, of course, the idea of the group of people that want to have America a communist state. And then we have the group that wants America to be an Islamic state. So they're going to have to fight over because we don't know what we're doing anymore here. But as our borders are overran and there's nobody that can stop it now. So one of the things I think that people are wondering about with this nuclear threat that Iran poses, how much time do you think we're really talking here? Now, understanding that Israel's,
survival.
Well, yeah, survival, and also their intelligence is much better than probably anything we have in America.
Sure.
Already, America's already saying, they believe that they have enough for a couple of nuclear bombs. What do you think, what kind of a timeline are we talking here?
Well, we have to prepare for it to be immediate, to be smart. And, you know, and it highly probably will be immediate. And we're talking about something that will probably have very adverse effects for all of humanity if it opens up a Pandora's box in the Middle East. You know, the first couple things that could happen is Iran could shut down the Strait of Hormuz. They've already threatened to do that. So they threatened that in the event of an American or Israeli strategic strike, that they would shut down the Strait of Hormuz, and that it also was reported on Newsmax.com that Iran has sleeper cells throughout our country, and that they could start to put together, you know, mass suicide attacks and you know, hold America hostage, it sort of talks about in the article. So, you know, Brett Stevens for the Wall Street Journal reported on September of 2009 that should... He did an article called Obama's Pushing Israel to War. He said that should the war occur, the price of oil could go up to $300 per barrel overnight. Now, it's been closing at about $70 to $80 per barrel. So, you know, we could find ourselves waiting in gas lines. We could, you know, not only be seeing that the BP spill is being plugged, but the Strait of Hormuz is being plugged, and there's an enormous amount of OPEC oil coming through the Strait of Hormuz. It would definitely upset China, who's the number two consumer of oil in the world. America's number one, and China relies a lot on the oil that's coming out through the Strait of Hormuz. So we're talking about just geopolitically things that could happen by the end of the year if Israel simply preempts a strike against Iran. Again, this will have a ripple effect over our whole economies, too, because it'll be translated into distribution costs, gas lines. You know, we've run into that in the past as well. I was just recently did a three-week tour in the UK speaking and doing some TV over there. And they're paying $1.19 a liter, which is 5 liters to a gallon. So, you know, if we're going to go up to about $10 a gallon, they're going to go up about four or five times as much as us. Well, let's say about two or three times as much as us. And that's just the UK. I mean, Europe in general is paying much higher gas prices at the pump as well. So we're going to see a very cataclysmic, potentially a very cataclysmic event occur in the Middle East. And of course, this is why Nations' capitals are making it a priority right now in desperation to bring peace in the Middle East. And this Cairo meeting that's going on this week with the Arab members, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, et cetera, is very important. And they're trying to get Benjamin Netanyahu and Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinians, to come to terms and to talk about peace without any preconditions. And, of course, that probably won't happen because Abbas has all kinds of preconditions. So, again, they've been trying to bring peace into the Middle East for the past 62 years. It's gotten Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and now Barack Obama a lot of sleepless nights. And meanwhile, the Palestinians and their friends are no longer just lobbing stones at the Jews, but they have high-tech arsenals that can wipe the Jewish state off of the map. And that's the mandate of Psalm 83. And that's, of course, what Ahmadinejad of Iran is saying he wants to do as well. They don't want peace with the Jews. They don't want a two-state solution. They want peace without the Jews, and they want one more Arab state, and they want to call it Palestine. And I think that the sooner the international community realizes this, the better off we're all going to be and just get down to the nuts and bolts of how this is all going to come about. And the Bible tells us it's going to come about through military endeavors. You know, at the end of diplomacy, wars occur. That's always been the way it is historically. And in the Bible, there's plenty of examples as well. So the question is, has diplomacy ended? And are we about ready to see these things happen? So,
do you believe that's what Israel is waiting for, is to see if all diplomacy is, finally exhaust that possibility? Because I think that a lot of people wonder why Israel has not already made their move. Ahmadinejad has basically declared war on Israel already, saying they do not have a right to exist. They should be pushed off into the Mediterranean Sea. If that was coming from some kind of, person in a newspaper, some crackpot, you would think, oh, well, there's always an idiot around. But when this comes from a president of soon to be a nuclear country saying they do not have a right to exist, it's a declaration of war, I think, in just about anybody's terms.
Well, I think that Israel has been holding off to, give sanctions and to give all diplomacy its final effort. You know, it's a very precarious position to be a tiny little Jewish state surrounded by 300 million Arabs that don't want you to exist for the most part. He has to be careful because there's a double standard with Israel. I mean, just look at the flotilla episode. They do one wrong thing and they get international condemnation when, any other nation would probably have done the same thing like in that flotilla episode. So they have to be very careful, but he is very firm that, he knows what his existential threats are and he's going to have to act upon them. Now, the commander of the Israeli Defense Forces, Gabi Ashkenazi, has said on numerous times they are prepared to deal with Iran and to do a strategic strike with Iran, and I'm sure it's what he's implying, but that they have to wait for the political go-ahead to do that. And I'm pretty sure that's what's been driving Netanyahu to hold back. Now, I do think, though, the time has run out, and I don't think Netanyahu's going to buy into any of these peace initiatives that are starting to come forward. He's heard them all before. There's nothing new.
You know, what comes to mind, Bill, as you're talking is, if there's anyone listening who questions the Word of God, I'm just looking at Psalm 83 written 3,000 years ago, and these 10-nation confederacy, the words sound just like the terrorists today. Come and let us cut them off from being a nation that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. And, of course, that's what they're saying, Hezbollah, Hamas, not just Ahmadinejad, but really leaders of these terrorist groups, they don't want peace. They want to wipe them off the map. But the Bible not only prophesies that this would happen, but in Zechariah 12, it says that Israel will be very strong. Ezekiel also talks about that, militarily very strong in the last days. And, of course, we're seeing that. So one possible scenario is when the catalyst happens, whatever the catalyst is, that Israel will, like they did in 1967 with the Six-Day War, they may devastate their enemies with overwhelming force very rapidly in a matter of days, subdue the terrorists, and then finally think they have peace. Because in Ezekiel 38, as you mentioned, they're dwelling in the land securely, or at least with a sense of security, when Russia, Iran, and the big neighbors attack. And so that would be a perfect setup. And, of course, that would also, I think, set up the world for, peace, peace. Because the Bible says when the world says peace, peace, then sudden destruction comes upon them. Even though Israel is the bad guy portrayed in the world. The world does not want the terrorists. And so if Israel subdued the terrorists, the whole world would breathe a collective sigh of relief. And it could be at that point when the world's saying peace, peace, that possibly the rapture happens. We know the rapture is imminent. It could happen today. But we also know that, Jesus said it'd be like the days of Noah, the days of Lot. The church of Laodicea would be lukewarm right to the end. And so I think that it's probably the trigger may happen, the rapture, that is, after the Psalm 83, Isaiah 17 war. Have you given that any thought?
Well, I'm often asked, where do I put the rapture? For some reason, as people hear me talk about sequencing Psalm 83 and Ezekiel 38, they tend to think that Psalm 83 has to happen before the rapture, and I don't necessarily know where they get that conclusion. However, I think the fact that Psalm 83 appears to be so nearby and finding final fulfillment, it does preclude the possibility that it could occur before the rapture. The church, of course, is still here. Now, I believe the rapture, I don't think the church is going to be here for Ezekiel 38 and 39, but we could be here for Psalm 83. Now, one of the reasons I don't believe we're here for Ezekiel 38 and 39 is because we're told three times God is calling Israel his people Israel. He says, you know, in Ezekiel 39:7, the main end goal of Ezekiel 38 and 39 is that God will uphold his holy name through in the midst of, he says, my people Israel, and the nations shall know I'm God. So, you know, three times in Ezekiel 38, I think it's verse 14 and verse 16, and then Ezekiel 39:7, he's calling them my people Israel. So it's, you know, they're fulfilling a very important role in God's plan. Russia's coming against them, and he's going to uphold his holy name. Now, the other reason I don't think the church is necessarily here for that is that, and I do put Ezekiel 38 and 39 as a pre-tribulational event, is because I think God is going to uphold his holy name so that humanity can realize he is the promise-keeping God of Israel. It requires Israel being in the land in the latter years, the land he promised Abraham. They're going to be in this land, and he's going to uphold his holy name against this massive Gog of Magog invasion. And he wants the nations of the world to know, you know, I pulled these Jews out of the nations of the world. That was a sovereign thing. I protected them against this Russian invasion. I am a promise-keeping God. And the world is going to have to make a choice shortly thereafter between the God of Israel and the Antichrist system that's going to be put into place. And it's going to be a very powerful system. He's going to emerge, as you know, Jim, in 2 Thessalonians on all signs and lying wonders. So God is going to give humanity a real wake-up call, and he's going to let them know he's a promise keeper, the God of Israel. This goes way back to the Abrahamic covenant 4,000 years ago, and then they're going to have a choice to make. And I think we're getting very close to all these events starting to happen soon.
One of the things that I am concerned about, I believe most of us are as well in the United States that are Christians, is the Islamic influence now that is increasing in the United States and wanting to dedicate this mosque at Ground Zero on 9/11 here in the next couple of months. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm very concerned about it as well. And the pattern with Islam historically is they defeat an area, and claiming victory, they then erect some kind of monument or a mosque or something like that. So I think that you're looking at a statement that they're trying to make in this situation. Now, as I stated earlier, I was in the UK, and I flew into Heathrow Airport, and I felt like it almost flown into a Middle East country. There was a lot of Muslims there. And they are really starting to saturate the middle of the UK. There's about 3 million Muslims over there, and there's 63 million in the UK presently. And they're starting to implement Sharia law in certain parts of the UK presently. This is the pattern. They come into these places. In France, it's almost 9% of their population now is turned Muslim. So they come into an area, and they want to, you know, resurrect and, you know, build a lot of mosques, and then they want to get Sharia law implemented. Their goal is to subrogate the planet to Islam. So it is a very dangerous situation. And we are, you know, and the problem with the UK that we're starting to have over here as well is it's, they're all about politically being correct and, you know, this sort of thing, and they're not calling a spade, if you will. And, you know, we are in that same sort of trend over here in this country. So I think we do need to be very careful about this. And the other thing, too, you talked about the borders and this whole Arizona immigration episode that got upturned. You know, there has been concern for a long time that there are terrorist cells that are you know, sleeping over in, across the south of the border in the Mexico area. So, you know, we have to protect our borders from numerous reasons, and one of them is, of course, the increase of terrorism. So there's numerous reasons we should be concerned in America about these types of things, even the little things, this immigration bill. It's not quite so small. It's a big deal.
Well, you know, we've reported before Atlanta, television station Atlanta, Georgia, went and did a special on the border and found out that many of the people coming across are not from Mexico or Central America or South America. They found a huge number coming across from Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq and these different Middle Eastern countries. And they estimate that there could be well in excess of 10,000 right now people from the Middle East that have come into this country illegally as terror cells. And anybody that's trying to stop us from knowing who's coming across our border, you would have to almost wonder, are these people that are controlling this, are they part of this overthrow of America? Because who in the world would not want to stop illegal immigration? It doesn't make any sense. Unless there's a master plan, and that's to destroy America, and many people believe that. I don't think it's conspiracy theory anymore. I think it's reality, because common sense would tell you that anybody that would be trying in some way to stop us from knowing what's in our country, and these are people that are calling them judges and lawyers and stuff, you have to say there's something else going on here. And I think we all, deep down in our gut, know something is really wrong. Now, we as Christians, we know that the world's headed for a one-world order. If people are not Christians, I think they still have that intuition, but they do not know what's going on, where this is all headed. And I think the powder keg is going to be the Middle East that's going to set it up.